Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, good morning to you. Welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show. It's a Friday. We're live up on Facebook this morning. Of course, X and Rumble and YouTube and however you're getting here, we do appreciate that. The Odyssey app, I heard from my son a little earlier who was listening in on the Odyssey app from Atlanta, Georgia this morning.
Is it lit?
Down there on a business trip. And he'll appreciate that, Carl.
Is it lit?
Thank you.
I hope Brad's still listening.
He's probably not at this point. That was a little bit earlier when he texted me. I'm sure he's taking a friend of his to breakfast this morning. So probably not. But thank you, Carl. Appreciate that. Anyway, wherever you are, we appreciate that. And if you are listening, please consider a donation to our ATF raffle. We're a little behind the cue ball here, and we've only got a few days left because we're going to pick a winner on the 27th. So we're 5 days out, and all you have to do is text the word responder to 33100. You can get your tickets. They're $1 a piece, $10 minimum, so you get 10 tickets. If you put 50 down, you get 55 tickets. You get bonuses the more you spend. And all of the money is going to Responder Rescue. And that's a great organization that backs up our first responders. You could win thousands of dollars in alcohol, tobacco, or firearms. It's our ATF raffle for Responder Rescue, and we'd appreciate your help. A little later, we're going to talk more about another great organization that has the backs of our first responders. That's Guns and Hoses. And in fact, Larry O'Toole, who's the new executive director over there, is going to be joining us this morning, along with Eureka Fire Chief Greg Brown and Mike Wiegand, the police chief down in Eureka. They'll be in studio in the next hour. We're looking forward to having them in. And not only because they promised to bring food, right, Carl?
We love them anyway.
We do love them anyway. But Carl said as we were coming on the air, only 90 minutes till we can eat. So he's already planning that out.
I've got two oranges right here, ready to go.
Is that just people in media? Because it was like that when I worked in TV. It's like that now in radio. Or is that how it is at every office where you just think about food, free food that's coming in, and that's all you're fixated on?
You get excited.
On.
Yeah, well, they stopped Mark's to see our friends at Sarah's and at Chicken Ellie's this morning down in Eureka. So we are very excited about that.
You've got food all day. That's your whole day.
It's good, though. Grill Master Tony later is going to be donating some food to the Wildwood Precinct, the St. Louis County Police. So we'll be out there in Wildwood just a little bit later today as well. All right, coming up, we're going to talk to J.J. Carafano, find out what he thinks about this. Now the attention's kind of focused to Pete Hegseth, Secretary of Defense candidate. And I'll find out what Jim has to say about all of that and maybe what's going on in Ukraine as well. C.B. Cotton at the bottom of the hour, reporting from Fox News on the Daniel Penny trial. I mean, what a travesty of justice. The poor guy tries to stop somebody who's threatening to kill people, and now they've got him being tried for murder, for stopping a mentally insane homeless man. It's a crazy world we live in. We'll get to that for you before the end of the hour. But right now, I want to get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
To have these blue state governors and these blue city mayors decide that they're going to interpret federal law how they see fit in the face of Donald Trump's overwhelming victory is egregious.
Yeah, Byron Donalds. That guy, if they didn't have such a thin margin in the House, maybe Trump would already have appointed him to something or named him. I think he'd maybe be a fantastic senator from the state of Florida.
Let me just say, all of you may not know this, but my Secret Service name is Celtic. For real. Because I'm Irish.
Secret Service generally doesn't like you to announce your private Secret Service name to the whole world, so that somebody might not overhear it and know that you're nearby. That's probably not a great idea, but at this point, I think for the most part, Joe has checked out.
The Illinois Supreme Court has just overturned, remember him, actor Jussie Smollett, the conviction that he had for orchestrating a hate crime hoax.
Yeah, here's what you want to do. If you're going to commit a crime, be sure you're good friends with a rotten prosecutor like Kim Fox up in Chicago, because that guy just got off on double jeopardy by the court, who said you can't charge him twice, and she already slapped him on the wrist, so there you have it.
A dangerous and effective pick, and that's frankly worse than what we would have got with Matt Gaetz, even with the deplorable moral background that he has.
The left losing their collective minds. I happened to be sitting down yesterday when I got an urgent notice from Truth Social, and I clicked on it, and it was from Donald Trump. Imagine that. And it said, happy to announce that I will be naming Pam Bondi to be my attorney general. And I'm like, wow, that didn't take long. And he had thanked Matt Gaetz for his service and all that. And I'm thinking now, let me think about this. How will the left now attack Pam Bondi? Immensely popular in Republican circles. She has been close to the president for a long time. She's helped him out as an attorney in the past. She was a Fox News contributor for a while, so she's got that going for her, right? Plus, she was an attorney general for 8 years in Florida. Mm-hmm. So she's got on-the-job training.
And now isn't she heading up kind of the legal side of things with the America First policy?
Yeah, I think so.
So he would have just seen her, obviously, at the gala.
And Linda McMahon worked for them as well, for America First. And I'm thinking to myself, how will they attack Pam Bondi? Well, now they're more worried than ever before. Now they're thinking, maybe we shouldn't have complained so much about Gaetz. Listen to the twisted logic this morning from this Jason Johnson over on MSNBC.
Florida is one of those states that's been very aggressive about migrants and deportation and moving people to different states and everything else like that. Florida has enacted all sorts of rules and laws to curtail students and what they can do on campuses and finding legal justifications for manipulating education money. She is a dangerous and effective pick, and that's frankly worse than what we would have got with Matt Gaetz, even with the deplorable moral background that he has.
Would she have been worse?
No, it's worse for them because she'll be effective. They think she'll be more likely to be effective than Gaetz would have been, having not done the job of attorney general before. She's got 8 years of experience and will basically be able to walk in the door and understand how things work, even though it's a much more vast bureaucracy than what she faced in Florida.
I guess. I think Matt Gaetz would have been very effective.
Oh, I do too. Maybe in a different kind of way, but I think she and Matt are on the same page of a lot of what they want to get done with the Department of Justice. I think I remember seeing Bondi interviewed after they raided Mar-a-Lago, which still sticks in everybody's craw, including Melania Trump's, which is why she refused to go sit down with Jill Biden and have tea and act like nothing's wrong.
With Pam Bondi, of course, being a woman, it might be hard for the left to criticize her as much. They're going to sit there and say,
wait,
Trump doesn't like powerful women. He's scared. Oh, I'm
How
sorry.
Do you
he just
know
picked
she's
a woman,
woman
for AG. That's true. We haven't asked her
Thank
how
you.
She identifies.
We have not asked her that question yet, Kim. Shame on you for assuming her gender. Just kidding.
Forgive me.
All right. We're back in a minute with Jim Carafano.
Kelly Clarkson here to let y'all know that it's the holidays at Wayfair. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to get your home holiday ready.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Did you sexually assault a woman in Monterey, California?
I have, as far as the media is concerned, I keep this very simple. The matter was fully investigated, and I was completely cleared, and that's probably legal. Thank you very much.
Pete Hegseth there. Earlier on Capitol Hill, I guess this must have happened yesterday afternoon when he was down there meeting with the senators, but now the light of the world has moved from Matt Gaetz onto Pete Hegseth.
You know, I was born in the South. South Bronx.
Welcome to the jungle. And we've got Jim Carafano on the phone. How are you, my friend?
I am good. How are you?
I'm good. We've caught you not on an airplane. That's fantastic.
It's shockingly, unbelievably true, actually. Well, I did just get off one, so there.
Did you really? Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Yeah, well, it was in Moldova, which is a really interesting country.
What's the reaction overseas that you're hearing from some of these Trump picks?
There's a lot of shock overseas, mostly because they consume an enormous amount of American liberal media. And so in many, many places, people just assume Harris is going to win. And then they were shocked to wake up and discover that Trump had won. And they really don't understand American politics very well. And that and people keep looking at individuals like, oh, this person or that person, and are missing the bigger picture in that what Trump is doing is he is picking a cabinet that reflects the diversity of the coalition that elected him. And he wants, and so it's very inclusive, and that rather than looking at individual picks, you should be looking at the coherence of the whole to understand how the American political scene has shifted and what the modern conservative movement and Republican Party look like. And mm-hmm. I think people just don't understand that.
Is there, you know, if you listen to the left on this, there's concern about Pete Hegseth as the choice for Secretary of Defense. Do you have any thoughts on that? Have you heard any feedback from it inside the circles?
Well, you know, it's all, you know, very predictable about what they're complaining about. I mean, there's kind of two packages here. One was the sexual assault allegation, and the other is, well, he just doesn't have the experience. I think the sexual assault allegation was, you know, pretty much a drive-by shooting. I don't think it's very credible.
Yeah.
It doesn't really reflect the Pete Hegseth I know. I don't think that the Brett Kavanaugh attack is going to work. So I think we can push that to the aside. More people were infuriated by the tattoo on his chest than they were about the
yes
thing. So and that's of course going nowhere. The notion that somehow he's a white supremacist or he has gang tattoos or something is just nonsense. Look, what's true is Pete does not have a lot of experience in working the Hill, which is a very important part of running DOD and running the building. I get that. But you can bring people in to do that. And Pete knows that. And I think we're actually going to have a very strong DOD management team. What he brings to the table, which is not to be discounted, is he is literally the poster child for selfless service and patriotism. He is literally the walking ad for virtuous, masculine, you know, not that there's anything wrong with having women in the military or anything, but the idea of and strong men and women and how you serve your country. And we need that. And what's pathetic is that you had a former four-star general sitting in the office in the Pentagon who should have been the paragon of what it means to serve in the military, support our men and women, get them what they need. And this guy will be 1,000 times better as a symbol of that. And he is a smart, nobody's ever said Pete Hegseth isn't smart and he isn't sharp and he can't make decisions. So I don't agree that this is a bad pick.
Switching gears a little bit, Jim, I don't think we've had a chance to talk to you since Biden gave Ukraine the okay to use the United States long-range missiles against Russia. And now, of course, Russia has used its own missiles against Ukraine. What do you make of this whole situation and the timing of when Biden gave Ukraine the okay?
Well, clearly the Biden okay was politics. Right, there, nothing changed on the battlefield that made it okay. He didn't want to shoot ATACMS beforehand and have it become an issue that might hurt Harris in the campaign. So shame on Biden for making decisions based on American domestic politics rather than on what's best for foreign policy American nations. But you know what? Biden's consistent. He's always put his politics ahead of the country for 4 years, so we shouldn't be surprised. I have a little different view than a lot of my folks. I don't think that, one, it's escalatory. And the other thing is, I don't think this is necessarily something a Trump administration ought to have a problem with. Trump wants Ukraine to be in the strongest position as possible when he comes into office, because that's what's going to drive a deal. And conversely, Putin is not an idiot. He knows the game's up. And at some point, he's going to have to come to the table. And he wants to be in the strongest position as possible. So what we're seeing on both sides now, both on the Russians and the Ukrainians, is not this escalatory race to World War III. It's posturing to be in the strongest position as possible. So when Donald Trump shows up, which they both know he's going to do. And he said, it's game over, which they both know they're going to say. They want to be to say, well, I have a stronger hand to negotiate with. That's what's going on.
That's why I love having you on here, because I've heard nobody else give that point of view on this. You know, everybody's like, well, they're pushing us to World War III. What's Putin going to do?
That's my take.
And I love that viewpoint, Jim. I had not considered that.
Well, all you have to do is spend, you know, a couple of thousand hours on airplanes flying around the world and talking to a couple of, you know, tens of thousands of people, and maybe your perspective is a little different. I don't know.
What was the missile that Putin fired back? It wasn't an ICBM. It was described as something else, and he said it was something new that couldn't be shot down. What's he talking about?
Well, it's actually something very similar to something I worked on when I was in the military. It's an intermediate range ballistic missile. So which means it actually has a ballistic trajectory. It's going to fly into space and then come back down. So it's more difficult to shoot down with traditional air defense and missile defense system. That's true. It's kind of an experimental thing, and the Russians don't have a lot of them. It has a big conventional payload, but okay, so do a lot of things. And the other thing is they don't really have that many of them. And what are they shooting at? They're shooting at civilian targets. These are like the V2s of World War II. They're terror weapons. They're not changing the calculus on the battlefield. And the fact that he's shooting a conventional, you know, just shows he's not going to go nuclear. I mean, he might, but you know. And that's the other thing. People keep talking about the change in nuclear doctrine, which actually is just going back to an old Russian doctrine that was already there, and actually isn't really that much different between the American and the French or the British doctrine. So the notion that somehow, and Putin loves this, right? He loves to think he's scaring people. And, you know, I don't blame people for being scared, because nuclear weapons, war is a real serious thing. But, but the doctrine itself is actually a nothing burger.
Interesting. Information we needed to hear today. Jim, thank you. Have a great weekend, my friend.
All right. Talk to you.
Yes, sir. Yes,
are you working next week?
I will be off next Friday. Thank you for pointing that out.
Well, I won't talk to you guys.
We'll talk to you soon, though, maybe in a week and a half. Thank you.
But if you had, then I'd have been there for you.
I know you would have. We appreciate you, man. We'll see you. All right. We'll be back here in just a minute. Love, Jim Carafano.
The New York City subway chokehold trial now on day 18 as Marine veteran Daniel Penny's defense team called a forensic pathologist to the stand before lunch break, who testified that the chokehold Penny applied to Jordan Neely was not what caused his death.
Wow, this case amazes me that it's even gotten this far. I can't believe what they're putting Daniel Penny through. Obviously, that's my opinion on it. CB Cotton with Fox News has been covering this trial. And CB, thanks for giving us some time today.
Hey, great to join you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yes, so tell me a little bit more about this testimony yesterday. I mean, if they can prove to this jury that the chokehold didn't cause the death, I mean, it's got to be one more reason not to convict Daniel Penny of this, right?
So this has been a pretty interesting trial with a lot of twists and turns so far. This forensic pathologist is one of the defense's final witnesses in this case, one of their final expert witnesses, Dr. Satish Chandru, and he testified yesterday that he was retained shortly after the incident happened in May of last year, and he says that a lot of things about the case has surprised him, but essentially, after he saw the video that was well circulated of the incident, he said he couldn't make a determination right away whether Daniel Penny's chokehold on Jordan Neely had indeed killed Jordan Neely. He said after he reviewed Jordan Neely's medical records, he came to the conclusion that a combination of the drugs in Jordan Neely's system, Jordan Neely's genetic condition, sickle cell trait, coupled with his schizophrenia, and the restraint and struggle with Daniel Penny all combined killed Jordan Neely. He testified to jurors yesterday that one thing that really surprised him so far in the trial is that the medical examiner ruled Jordan Neely's cause of death the chokehold before she received the toxicology results. Of course, at this point in the trial, we have no idea how the defense's case so far is going to impact deliberations, but it's certainly their latest expert, you know, contradicts the medical examiner entirely.
And he's charged with first-degree murder, is that right?
He is charged with second-degree manslaughter, okay, and criminally negligent homicide. So no murder charges in this case. And prosecutors only have to prove that Daniel Penny acted recklessly. Some people feel that the prosecution so far has put on a strong case and a strong finish, particularly with the medical examiner who was so adamant on the stand that the chokehold is what killed Jordan Neely. She said it was not probable that the drugs in Neely's system or his schizophrenia or his sickle cell trait led to his death. But again, now you have the defense presenting its case and calling one of its latest experts, this forensic pathologist, who says, no, my findings are the exact opposite.
Do you think that Daniel Penny will end up testifying?
We're all waiting to see for that, and we're in touch with a lot of key players in this case. Obviously, we communicate regularly with the Manhattan District Attorney's Office about cases they bring here in New York City. We're also in touch with Daniel Penny's defense team, so of course we're talking to all the key players. And Daniel Penny's lawyers are keeping that very, very close to their chest. We asked whether or not Penny himself would take to the stand after this final expert witness, and they haven't told us, but it's something we're watching for. If he does not take to the stand, the only time jurors will have heard directly from the Marine veteran are a videotape, a 25-minute videotaped interview that Penny had with police right after the incident. He was read his Miranda rights. He waived them, and he agreed to speak with police back on May 1st of last year, again, right after everything took place. Mm-hmm. And I think that video, it's been played for the jurors several times in this trial. It's going to give them a lot of insight into Daniel Penny's mindset after what took place. He said several times to the detectives, I wasn't trying to hurt him. I wasn't trying to kill him, but he was threatening people and I was trying to keep him away from people.
Wow. CB Cotton, I know you got to run here. We appreciate the information. Thank you.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right.
You guys.
Yep. Take care of yourself. Daniel Penny is a hero. If I'm the defense attorney, I'm looking at the jury and thinking, I want each one of you who've ridden the train yourself, maybe daily, to consider yourself being on a train where a man, a stark raving lunatic, is running up and down the train telling you he's going to kill people. Think of how frightened you would be in that moment. Mm-hmm. And think of how relieved you would be if an American hero, a veteran like Daniel Penny, stepped forward and protected you. How could you possibly convict this man of anything other than giving him a medal of some sort for what he did that day, as opposed to convicting him for the death of this lunatic? The world's better off without him anyway.
I'm trying to think of other ways that Daniel Penny could have stopped the threat of Jordan Neely without the chokehold. And because if he's threatening people, he's going to do whatever it takes to stop the threat, right? So I don't know if he was, I don't know what how they are as far as like size wise, if it was a pretty even matchup, if he would have been able to take him down. But the guy, it sounds like he was on drugs, schizophrenic. So in some cases, I feel like that can kind of lead to the super strength,
sure,
right?
Sure.
So I don't know. I mean, maybe he felt like the only way to really do it to stop the threat was to put him in the chokehold. It's going to be interesting if he testifies, because I've covered a number of trials. I know you have, Mark, when we both worked as TV reporters. Man, I mean, you listen to them testify and then you have the other side come question them and try to poke holes in their story. And I feel like so often it just doesn't bode well for the person themselves to testify.
Right.
You poke enough holes and it raises the doubt, and that could be enough to convict
him. It sounds like the interview he did right afterwards was raw and real, and mm-hmm. it doesn't give the prosecution a chance to cross-examine in that situation. So I wouldn't want to put him on the stand. I hope that I frankly probably hope they don't. But what a travesty of justice if this guy gets convicted of this. I mean, I really believe that. It's almost like the Ferguson effect. If he gets convicted of this, it's like the Ferguson effect. Anybody anywhere who has a defense mechanism and wants to protect other people is going to hesitate to step forward and do anything in a situation like that if they know it's very likely the DA's office in New York will charge you with murder,
right,
or assault if you hit somebody who's threatening to kill other people.
Right.
It's we're getting to a point in society where they've blurred right and wrong so much that good people are going to stand back out of fear.
Well, you know, obviously with the Second Amendment rights, the left is constantly trying to restrict our gun rights. And, you know, because of, thank goodness, the Constitution, it makes it in a lot of cases difficult to do that. So maybe this is their next approach is, OK, if we can't enforce the gun laws like we want them to be enforced, maybe our next move is to make it like in this case where I know he didn't have a gun, but let's just say he did, where if you're trying to defend somebody and protect people, it makes it a lot easier for these DAs to prosecute them saying you used unnecessary force, da da da. And now we're going to, you know, put you on trial for it.
Because that prosecutor was there in the moment and he knew what force was necessary,
mm-hmm.
right? That which would be none, because it clearly they're a pacifist and they don't want anything done. I when I saw that offered this morning, I wanted to get CB Cotton on here to explain to you that yes, this trial is still going on. The defense is probably getting ready to wrap up here because they've been at it for how many days?
Today
now?
Is day 19.
Today is day 19 of this trial. They have spent that much time and that many resources of taxpayer money in New York State to try to try an American hero and a veteran who is doing nothing other than protecting people.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a criminal record. He doesn't have a record of assaulting people and none of that. He stepped up and tried to protect his fellow travelers on that train. And that's the thanks he gets from America.
You know, talking about these trains, this, of course, in Manhattan, that subway that he was on when this happened and was screaming threats. And it's just, I'm not trying to harp on the metro, but you hear about all these problems here in the metro. And it's kind of scary when you're not allowed to defend yourself, really, it seems like, when you're in an enclosed space like that.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, our metro here is not all that different.
Well, that's what I mean.
They've got extra security now, supposedly, but you're not allowed to defend yourself.
But how big of a difference is it really making? I mean, we still hear about incidents happening on the metro, and I know they've taken steps, and I applaud them for those steps they've taken to
increase
security. Should
have done that 30 years ago.
Yes, I agree, and it sounds like more needs to be done.
Yeah. It's hard to reverse 30 years of, you know, negative perceptions because you just got around to securing the platforms and putting some extra security out there. It's tough. What are we talking about today on Kim on a Whim?
Well, we all enjoyed, well, many of us enjoyed working from home in the COVID era. And a lot of the federal employees, they also like working from home. And many of them don't want to go back to the office. And the Department of Government Efficiency is now kind of saying, you know, if you don't come back to the office, you might be fired.
Woo! Little Doge news coming up. We'll be right back.
Kim on a Whim.
I'll be the first to admit I really enjoyed working remote during COVID. I remember in the beginning when they told us we were going to be working remote, I was kind of reluctant. I just didn't think it'd be a good idea. And then after a couple weeks, I'm like, well, this is fantastic. And I bet you a lot of people felt the same way because you could get all sorts of stuff done and you'd make sure you're checking in. You'd still get your job done. But, you know, you had more flexibility.
I complained about it a lot.
We were
out almost 4 months. They wouldn't let us back in the building. And they made me broadcast from my living room. And I hated it because I don't have an indoor voice. And I would go on the air at 5 in the morning and wake the whole house up. And I didn't miss it until the day they told me I had to start driving back down here every day. And I missed that 30-foot commute.
Yeah.
I really did.
I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yes.
And now you have Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, who are heading up the Department of Government Efficiency, who are telling the federal employees, you need to come back to work. They call it a practice of privilege to work from home that was left over from the pandemic. So a number of people, federal workers, have already threatened to quit. Supposedly, this could affect more than 1 million federal workers because about 1.1 million federal workers are approved for some degree of telework. So I don't know if that means like you can work from home a couple of days a week or it's, a you know, 5 days a week you're working from home.
You just have no idea. It was so bad. I knew somebody that got the federal assistance for the rental program, right? And that place was shut down for 2 years. They let everybody work from home. You couldn't walk in there and file for paperwork or anything. It was all remote. And they saw no problem with that. It's awful.
Yeah.
It's your government. They should be there to provide services.
Listen to this. About 228,000 employees are in remote positions with no expectation that they work in person on any regular or recurring basis. I was listening to a Charlie Kirk podcast about this, and he was claiming, I'm not sure if there's truth to it, he was claiming that a number of these people might go check in once a month, once a quarter, where they're going into the office to kind of show face, like, hey, I'm here, I'm still alive, I'm doing my work. And then a lot of them are picking up secondary jobs.
You're kidding me.
And they might, you know, be a waiter and just make it work to make secondary income.
Doge. Where's Doge when we need it?
I think this could be really interesting to see what happens. Charlie on X, he was quoting a CNN article, and they were talking to people who would be potentially impacted by this. And this is what one person said, a federal employee. Quote, the stress would be through the roof. I'm at the point where if I had to commute, I would resign. I would take this as a sign to move on and start a new chapter in my life.
Get on with it.
Build me a bridge. What are they? What's the build me a bridge? Cry me a river. Build me a bridge and get over it. Look, I get it. We don't like the commute. Now, some people in these articles I've read have said, you know, I took this position and then when they moved me remote, I took my family to a completely different state
across the
country. We bought a house. We built a life there. I do understand. So I think to some degree there should be. I don't know if I grandfather in.
Accommodation?
I think there should be something where if you've moved across the country when you were allowed to, I can understand that. But for the people who just don't want to commute, you know, 45 minutes in or whatever, get over it. You used to do it. Get over it. Why should you still be working from home 5 days a week?
I'm with you.
But I don't think you should force people to go in 5 days a week per se.
But here's the deal. With the federal government specifically, it's almost different for a private business. Because if, for example, the radio station decides that, you know, because all the salespeople are working from home, they don't need all the extra space they were using for the sales desk, they downsize to smaller space, the company might do that to save money. The federal government didn't close down any federal buildings. All the buildings are still sitting there. They're still heating them and lighting them and paying utilities on them and renting space and all of that stuff. It's just that the employees don't show up anymore. It's a waste of government resources. Somebody needs to go in and clean that up. And I don't have the same. I mean, I get it. If you're lucky enough to have a job that said, well, you don't need to be here, so you can live anywhere you want, and you move to beautiful Montana, mm-hmm. I get that. I would love to do that. But the reality is, if the rules change, you had to know when you left, you might have to go back someday.
Yeah, it was this one person, I guess, was a Library of Congress worker and said the worker doesn't have an office to return to since others within the Library of Congress have already moved into their former space. So maybe there is some truth to that. I don't know. I mean, when Vivek and Elon Musk have already started working on this. In fact, Vivek has given up his weekly podcast that he was doing, I guess, on his own in order to do Dogecasts. They're going to be doing, I believe it's weekly updates, good. Their own podcast.
And hopefully they get Rand Paul on there on a regular basis because he's got some good ideas too.
Well, Charlie Kirk is apparently going to be kind of like a side advisor in this. But Rand Paul, man, he would be fantastic. He should just go on in the beginning of the Dogecast and talk about all the dumb ways our money is being spent by the federal government.
I know. This is so
almost
great.
Just for like comedic relief, because I think many of us would be dumbfounded to learn some of the things that have been approved to spend taxpayer money on.
Yeah.
Like cats with half their brains missing on treadmills. Or what was the other one? The sex drive?
The Japanese birds, how aggressive they are on cocaine.
No, if it increases their sex drive when they're on cocaine.
Your tax dollars at work, but not for much longer. Hey, coming up, we're going to give away another pair of tickets to Guns N' Hoses. And we're going to talk to Colonel Larry O'Toole, the new executive director of Backstoppers.
Get more at 971talk.com.